violent crime. She innocently questioned why father had to die. She asked the man in blue, how is it that you get to choose?
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. I am joined, as promised, by Maggie Dawn. She is the corporate counsel of Milwaukee County. And Robert Miranda, who is, you know, just a fighter, a community fighter, and a retired military veteran of Afghanistan, Robert?
Brother, you put me too early. I was in Beirut.
Oh, Beirut. Okay. Let's go to Al, man. Al from Milwaukee. Hey, Al, how you doing? Thank you very much for the call. Al?
Did we lose Coach Holmes? Because I'm guessing that's who that Al is from Milwaukee. Hello, yeah, Coach Holmes.
He should. He's on. He may not hear you.
Hey, Al. Okay, he's
Sounds
struggling.
Like you might be breaking up.
Okay. We'll wait until Al gets into a better place. But Robert, I think he's still... Okay. So, Robert, Al, call back. So Robert, here we are. It's election day. And the entire world is watching. What are your thoughts, man? You've been at this a long time, man. You really have. You've been a fighter. You're always fighting for the community. That you fight as hard for the community probably as you did, and even harder than you did, in the military. But what's at stake, man? If Republicans get their way in all these races, what do people think they're going to get? The average person who's voting Republican, Robert, what do they think they're going to get from the Republican Party?
Well, the big thing that they, I believe, think that they are going to get from the Republican Party is safe streets. That's the biggest angle that I think that they are looking to get.
But their streets are already safe. You go to all these different Republican enclaves, where are their streets unsafe?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Well, where are their streets unsafe in these Republican enclaves?
I'm talking about these Republicans who are looking at that issue are looking to make, they want a heavy-handed law enforcement effort to be engaged in our community.
Right.
Because they want that to be the epicenter of their effort to eventually come into
the cities.
Exactly.
Well, and I think... Don't you think, Robert, that Democrats need to be able to have a conversation about both? So when the both here is that we need police that are accountable to the communities and engage with the communities that they protect, right? Because I think people's concerns about crime have been exaggerated because it works. Again, this is a fear-motivated or a fear-driven political tool. And that is deeply tied to the racism in this country, right? There, you know, I would love to ask a guy named Paul, why do you think they darken the skin of black candidates in advertising, right? Why do you think they use words like different and dangerous when describing black candidates? Why are bullseyes put by Republicans on Democratic candidate faces and likenesses? Why has cash bail never been explained, right? Cash bail, it provides the right to rich people to get out of jail that is denied to poor folks. If you eliminate cash bail, then you get locked up for certain crimes before you're tried for them, regardless of your wealth status, right? You would think that that's probably a good thing. In other words, you're charged with certain aggravated assaults, certain, murder, those sorts of things. You're not getting out depending on how much coin is in your checking account, right? That's what the end of cash bail means. So we need to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time, and that is talk about what actually prevents crime and not just talk about the funding level for police that largely do respond to crime, right? What prevents crime? Education, good housing, good transportation that's affordable and accessible, right? And violence interruption, like we see from folks like Reggie Moore in the city of Milwaukee and the Office of Violence Prevention in the city. Those are the things that actually prevent crime.
So Robert, hang on. Connor, is Al? Can we get Al? Is Al back? Al? Okay. We're having trouble now. Go ahead, Robert. You can respond.
Let me get to that point of being able to have that discussion. I agree everything with what you said. Everything is on point. But the one area that we need to understand is, if not the majority, the vast majority of a lot of these Republicans have never experienced the kind of interactions that communities of colors have experienced with
the police. Of course, yes.
And so for that community, it is hard to understand and believe that police can act in that egregious manner. And so they take it upon themselves to believe that the police are the one being the truth here. They're the truthful ones, that these people of color, these people who live in those communities are fitting every stereotypical line that they can, they've been told all through their years. They have to get a grasp and an idea that the culture that they're used to with respect to their relationship between the community and the police department and their communities is not the same culture that we have in our communities, and that they need to understand that when if we're going to have a discussion in regards to safety, in regards to security, they have to have an intuitive understanding.
Yeah, I totally agree, Robert. Like, I always ask folks that are strongly right that I happen to know, have you ever sat down, if you have a person of color who's a friend, if you have a friend, because here in Wisconsin, we're so segregated, here in southeastern Wisconsin, we're so segregated, the odds that Paul has a friend who's a person of color is probably pretty small. But I encourage folks, have you asked a friend of yours, a good friend of yours, if they trust you and feel safe enough to have this discussion? How do you feel when a cop pulls you over? Have you listened to what that person of color has to say? Have you asked that person of color if they have to have, quote, the talk with their children? Which is a complete loss of innocence that this, for me growing up, if I saw a cop car, I ran up to it and asked the guy or gal for baseball cards. Right. That was my experience with police. I have now known and watched and been next to friends of mine who are people of color as they had to endure a very different interaction with police. And so listening to people and not immediately dismissing those issues is absolutely critical, Robert. And I'd say it seems contrary to simple, plain logic, right? If the folks who engage in rabid racist stereotyping then say, oh, but the cops act without any stereotypes and treat everybody fairly, it doesn't seem to hold true. Like, if they themselves have these sort of overwhelming, sweeping, stereotypical beliefs about black and brown folks, but all of a sudden the folks in the police force don't?
So, you know, as a grizzled old man, I certainly know from the time I was a young boy, you know, the relationships that I've had with law enforcement. And even to this point in my life, you know, do I fear law enforcement? You know, I'm very cautious and very careful. There is a difference, though, somewhat for me, because as a young boy growing up in the city, I didn't see any black law enforcement officers. And I'll tell you, there is a difference That's why there needs to be more law enforcement officers who look like the people in which they police, Robert. There needs to be.
And that's totally on point there, Earl. And I'll tell you, my experiences I've had, but I'm watching a nephew that I have now. I have a nephew that is 30 years old. And my nephew is brown as brown can be. And he lives out in Oak Creek. And I'm getting a call from his girlfriend, who is a white female, who tells me and calls me and says, you know, your nephew just got pulled over. Your nephew just got stopped. Your nephew was at the store and they followed him around. You know, and she's just at a loss as to why, once he walks into a place or once he's driving, she notices that there is this change in attitude when he walks in someplace or when they pass a cop that is parked. And all of a sudden, that cop is following them, you know. So, you know, for him having that brown skin, he can't meld in. He can't be part of what the rest of the community looks like. And so he's an easy target. Very easy target.
My heart rate goes up when a cop pulls out behind me because I'm afraid I'm going to get a ticket, get a couple points taken off my license, and my insurance cost goes up. I'm not worried about losing my life that day.
You know.
He's worried about being told to get out of the car and being searched and then taken in for some kind of frivolous issue.
You know, there are people who clearly who don't understand that, and they really maybe in their hearts of hearts believe that this doesn't exist anymore, you know, but it does. And so people who clamor for more law enforcement, more police and all those things who don't live in our community really don't understand. Listen, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open as always. Robert, you going to hang with us?
I got to get going.
Okay,
Earl.
Man, thank you. Thank you.
Man,
we'll talk after the election, Robert. Thank you. But the dawn of resistance is still here. We'll come to the phone lines after the break. 844-967-2789. Be right back. Okay. Day edition of the Earl Ingram Show, 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789, text us at that same number. The Dawn of Resistance herself, Corporate Counsel of Milwaukee County, Maggie Dawn, is in the studio. Maggie, let's talk about what's at stake on the state level when we talk about a supermajority. What does that mean? Because people haven't talked much about it, but what impact would that have on all of the things that are happening on the state level if that happens and Republicans have control over all of those things?
So it means the Republican legislature can override a gubernatorial veto. So you assume Evers wins, but the Republicans get a supermajority. They now can override any veto of any legislation by Governor Evers.
So the reason that people should be terrified of that, Governor Evers vetoed 126 horrendous bills, more than anybody else in the last three or four governors combined. Can you imagine if Governor Evers wins
first thing that hits his desk is all sorts of, quote, election improvements that will simply function both in spirit and in actual application to disenfranchise black and brown folks and to make it as hard as possible for working people, regardless of race, to vote by restricting hours of polling places, restricting or eliminating earlier absentee voting, simply by putting as many roadblocks in place as possible. That's going to be thing one. Thing two, perhaps at the same time, will be all sorts of legislation that impedes an individual's right to select the health care with the advice of their doctor that is best for them. So you're going to see all sorts of much more draconian abortion restrictions coming into play. I would also suggest that they would attempt to compel district attorneys to, in fact, enforce these sorts of draconian women-targeting laws about reproductive health. We may see legislation that starts to address things like my access to birth control. So I'm not talking about abortion. I'm just talking about, like, the pill or an IUD or the implants that you can have, all those different things. If you will ban abortion in the case of rape and incest and continue that and criminalize it in the case of when the mother's health is at risk, it ain't a bridge too far to simply say we're going to make it, you know, totally legal for doctors and pharmacies to decline to prescribe or fill prescriptions for birth control medication.
You know, Maggie, people who have paid their price to society, who've been incarcerated, who have done all the things necessary to be freed, they are going to do away with that.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to have permanent life bans. I mean, have
on
people
voting,
locked up.
Yep.
And have people locked up for lifetimes for things that they paid a price already, that the judge and juries have already said, this is your time to be released. They're going to stop all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, people really need to understand, if you are a person who are going to vote Republican and you somehow think that these people, and you're the average person, and you're a rural person, and you say, yeah, well, I'm voting with the Republicans because they're going to do these things for me. Exactly what are they going to do for them, Maggie?
Yeah.
What would you say? What?
I can't figure it out. I mean, honestly, other than basically creating a false or exaggerated impression of the risk of crime. That's really what you see a lot of folks on the right or that are leaning right voting on. And then you see the rich cohort that are like, well, my tax breaks will increase, right? The flat tax floated by Michaels, and no doubt he doesn't put any specifics to it at all, because there's only two versions of it. The one version, if you actually create a flat tax that would effectively not bankrupt the state of Wisconsin and by extension through our process of shared revenue, bankrupt cities and municipalities, would be at a level where 97% of Wisconsinites would pay more tax and only the richest 3% would see a reduction in tax. If you would reduce the tax, the flat tax, to a level where slightly more people in the state of Wisconsin would see a tax break, it will literally drive the state into deficits and require the most draconian cuts to any of the social service programs that help our most vulnerable citizens and residents. So, you know, I don't know what regular middle-class working folks think a billionaire like Trump and these multi-millionaires like Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels, you think rich folks care about you in the middle class? They care about their pocketbook. And you see the right, again, sort of sacrificing, I think, what they claim to care about, which is middle-class folks and being sure people have prescription drugs that they can afford, health care that they should be able to access at a reasonable cost, and family-sustaining wages. They're not voting rationally because Republicans don't stand for those principles. They talk about it, but blankety-blank talks. You know, excuse me, blankety-blank is blankety-blank, right? Look at what the policies are. Again, Democrats, the Inflation Reduction Act, an actual infrastructure bill that Republicans talked about passing forever. You know, ARPA, stepping in and trying to save working people who were harmed by the pandemic, standing with the American people in the pandemic. Turn on the rational frontal lobe. Right?
Listen, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Show, an election day edition of the Earl Ingram Show at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. You know, my guest is the dawn of resistance itself, Maggie Dunn, the corporate counsel of Milwaukee County. Let's go to the phone lines, man. Let's bring Eric from Tulsa up on line one. Hey, Eric, how you doing, man? Thank you very much for the call. You say what, man?
Happy election day.
You too,
Earl,
man.
And Maggie and everybody else over there.
And Eric, man, thanks for all the work that you're putting in. You know, win or lose, man, it's people like you who get out and do all those things, man. Let me ask you, why are you spending...
Well, it takes all of us.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead.
And I was going to ask you why you are, volunteering, for the rides and all those things, man. That's over and above the call of duty. You obviously have a sense that there's something that's going on that has to happen in order for, this to be a better place.
For us to move forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, first of all, fortunately, I have the time. I'm kind of in a point in my life where I kind of have a little bit of time, and I decided this is the best way to spend my free time that I do have, is trying to engage people and trying to encourage people that may not be thinking about voting to get out there and make sure their voice is heard. And I'll tell you what, in the time I've been canvassing for the last couple of weeks, it's pretty encouraging. I mean, there aren't many folks that I've encountered that haven't been telling me they're already going to vote or they're already voted. They're telling their friends and family. So it's actually pretty encouraging. As well, you know, when you get to talk to people, you get the idea that I think I've seen a lot of like talk about people thinking the polls may be wrong and things like that. And if today follows through on that enthusiasm, then they may very well be right. I'm hopeful, obviously. I'm gonna be down at Turner this evening, you know.
I'll see you down there, man.
I'll see you down there too, Eric.
Yeah. Yeah, let's invite everybody. They keep telling me invite friends, so I figured I'd call y'all, invite y'all, but you're already going to be there. So,
well, the Daily Beast.
I'd like to say really quickly, though.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
The Daily Beast had a headline that ran yesterday that said pollsters have no effing idea what's going to happen. And that couldn't be more true. So amen. And keep telling folk it matters. Show up. Get there. Do your duty. You will feel good about it, because if you don't, you got nothing to say about it.
Drag a friend. I'd like to say really quick, though, earlier you're talking about the talks among people, like trying to talk to people that may be conservative and things like that. And a lot of it's so anecdotal and one person at a time. And I always think back to the idea of like an H.R. 40, where these are the moments where a federal government that is largely responsible for the conditions we live under, for better or worse, needs to step in and take a role in this whole thing of trying to get people to talk and discuss things. something like H.R. 40 would open those doors up. And also, you were talking about supermajorities, and I'd like to say that if people are wondering what a supermajority in Wisconsin would look like, all you got to do is take a look at the bills the Republicans attempted to pass, all the crazy draconian copycat bills that Governor Evers was able to veto, and we would look like basically Mississippi or Alabama, where, make no mistake about it, white males would dominate everything in our lives. So everyone needs to understand that if that's what you're for, that's what you're for. But to everybody in this state, I don't think everybody wants white males to dominate every aspect of their life.
Well, and I'd add this, it'd be rich white males, right? Rich white males and those that have
I'm not wealthy, but I could get in the door too. You know, if you're smart and you're capable, and I'm not saying that about myself, but it's not necessarily rich white males like to use other white males in order to further
I'm saying, like, you don't get the phone call back from the governor, but the Koch brothers do. You don't get the phone call back, but folks like Tim Michaels do. Rojo does. They talk to their people, right? And those people are generally rich white men. So yeah, you might be able to get a seat at the table, but the message and the policies are those that serve those in power.
Yeah, the silent hand, as we call it. And what I like to say about those folks too is everybody kind of talks about them taking away democracy, and I always remind everyone they only intend to take it away from everybody else. That's the one thing, and their only promise, the only thing they have to run on nowadays and keeping the folks in their tent is that they promise to keep them one rung above black folks, LGBT community, and for men specifically, we are promised from this Republican, et cetera, party to be one rung among women for the rest of our lives. And that's a big movement too that nobody really mentions much, but that's also a promise that we get. They see the women gaining rights, and they promise us we're going to take them away. And so they sucker dudes in. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you very much.
Hey, Eric, man, thank you very much for all the hard work, man. And thank you for those words.
I'll be back out today.
Those words of wisdom. Let's go back to Tom. Hey, Tom.
I was thinking about what you said about Paul. And honestly, I just could never imagine living in their skin. I'm very, very happy that I don't have this self-hatred or this victim mentality. You know, the earlier call that was calling in, you know, just so, say whatever he said. I really don't even know what he said because it was so
Tom,
ridiculous.
Let me ask you, as a gay man who is a fighter, very outspoken, when you hear a guy like Tim Michaels say, well, they can do whatever they want to do, you know, in the private of their home, just don't bring it out in the public. Those words should be disqualifying for any person in any political office, right? I mean, the 100%. Fact that you can be that bigoted, say that, should mean that there's no way possible you can ever get elected, right?
100%. I mean, you know, for years, myself as a football player and a coach and all the stuff, I heard the stuff that was being said about LGBTQ people. And, you know, it was one of the reasons why it took me.
Yeah, but this man is running for governor. If you feel that
I agree.
As a private citizen, okay. But to say I want to be the governor and you said that, who would then trust a person like that?
Well, exactly. And the thing is, when President Obama came out in favor of gay marriage, I mean, that was probably like one of the greatest things ever. People don't even realize what that meant to LGBTQ people. I mean, it was an absolute, like, it's just the support of having somebody that's at the highest levels of your government to know that they're not going to, you know, either stop you from getting married or not going to throw you in jail because of the fact that you're intimate with someone of the same sex.
It's nobody else's business.
Well, it's nobody else's business, exactly.
I don't understand why someone else's religion and their beliefs about faith and God and whatever they want to talk about translates into our civil system of laws.
It
like, I don't understand
do
that. Like,
Especially when we're secular. I mean, everyone pays taxes, and not everyone that pays taxes is even religious. So the whole point is that if you're paying taxes to be part of this society, then you shouldn't be saying that you have to push someone else's you know, religious beliefs on another person, whatever that religion is. It's absolutely insane to me.
I did want to say one other thing before I go.
Oh, no, I just wanted to say, what would have happened if that woman that did that with the military ballots, what would have happened if she would have been black?
Oh, man, come on.
Exactly.
Tom, thank you very much for the call.
Think about that, white people.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. Let's do this. Al, are you on? You got a working phone?
Yes.
Al, what's going on, man?
I just had to call to harass Maggie.
Hey, Coach. How you doing, Al?
I'm always good. I love me.
Love you, too.
I need a campaign manager, so when this election is over, I'm soliciting you.
Hey, Al, I told the folk I had my posse with me this morning. You know, when you got Maggie, you know, you don't need anybody else, right?
Well, no. See, I used to harass her, so now it's her turn to come and harass me.
So, Al, it's
when I run for office, I'm going to run for alderman, and I need Maggie to help.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations, man. Listen, let me tell you where you're making a mistake.
Congratulations,
So Donald Trump said, November 15th, I got a big announcement, everybody. November 15th. Why are you telling everybody right now? Why did you say, hey, November 15th, I got a big announcement?
Why?
Yeah. Why didn't you do it like Trump?
Soliciting Maggie. I'm not. I don't care about other people.
So Al, let me ask you, man.
Basketball. She said I beat up on her a little bit, so now it's her turn.
Al, let me ask you. You've been around a little while. It's, you know, we're watching these people. You've seen a lot in your lifetime. Republicans of today. What's different about this group of Republicans from the other group of Republicans? Let's say the Ronald Reagan Republicans, you know, let's say, you know, the Republicans of yesteryear and the Republicans of today. Why is there such, why are these people more dangerous than the other Republicans of yesteryear?
Because they're not Republicans. They're fascists, and the Republicans of yesteryear used to be black.
Oh, yeah, I remember from those times. But I'm talking about the Ronald Reagan Republicans and those kind of folk. You know, we thought they were bad.
It's about wealth, number one, and then power and control. And basically, in order to obtain and retain the wealth, they feel like they have to have full control over other people in order to make that happen.
Yeah, but Russ, Al, they can't maintain that the people unless the average people vote for them. The average people don't have wealth. So
Maggie was telling you earlier about fear and campaigning, and basically 99% of what they do in every campaign is bring up fear factors, talking about crime and how these people are going to be coming and inundating the suburbs and all of the white neighborhoods that basically they don't have a crime problem. But these are issues that they create fear to scare people away from voting, number one. And number two, if they do vote, to vote their way because they think that these people are going to help them and take care of them. They haven't taken care of them in 200 years, so why would they start now?
Yeah, I mean, Al's got his finger right on it, right, Earl, which is if you can't actually win on the merits of your argument, you just create all kinds of distraction. You create theater to take people's attention away from the fact that the policies and the laws that you enact do not help the workers working class and middle class of America, regardless of folks' race. And as we know, any policy that hurts the middle class writ large, including white middle class folks and white working class folks, will always have an exponentially worse impact on any other historically oppressed group of folks. So you just have to distract, and you do that by, again, creating fictitious enemies and establishing as the framework a zero-sum analysis. So I don't want to be too technical, right? But zero-sum means if someone else does better, you do worse.
That's correct.
That undermines everything that's coming from those MAGA Republicans, and then they wrap a little bow around it with racism, homophobia, and misogyny.
Well, I just got off of the elevator, and the elevator smelled like a smokehouse for marijuana.
Well, breathe deep, Al. We got to relax today, but get people energized to go on out and vote.
No, there was a white man on the elevator with me delivering water. And I said, oh, Lord, this smells like a smokehouse.
Well, that is a fact, right, Al? That is a fact that white folks and black folks use marijuana at the exact same rates, but black folks get locked up for it. Yep.
To me, it smells like this all over the north side.
Listen, we've got to go to a break. Al, thank you very much for the call. I see you, Karina. You're up next, CJ, William. Hang on, Bill. We'll take a short break. We'll be right back to the phone lines. All right. Welcome back to Election Day edition of the Earl Ingram Show. 844-967-2789 is the number. You can text us. It's at the same number. Maggie Dawn, corporate counsel for Milwaukee County, and the Dawn of Resistance is still here. Let's go to the phone lines. And Corinna from Milwaukee. Good morning, Corinna. How are you? Thank you very much for the call. You say what? Corinna?
I think it's Karina.
Oh, Karina?
Are you there?
Okay, put her on hold. Let's go to CJ.
Morning. CJ? Good morning, Earl.
Yeah, good morning.
Good morning, Earl and Maggie. This is going to be a great day. We're all exercising our democracy. And if distraction is what you love, that's... and I feel bad because Maggie usually doesn't understand my sense of humor or get it, but...
Do you have one?
Oh, I got a great one, Earl. But I tell you what, the false narrative that your party has been showing for the last 2 or 3 months, trying to play catch up on the real issues that are concerning Americans, your party is in the tank. That's why you don't want this president, who's the worst president ever in our history, in 2 short years.
Including Donald Trump?
Yeah, I know the 1.4 inflation, really, we missed that, don't we? We hated that, didn't we, Earl?
CJ, just inflation a question about inflation. Do you how much role, CJ, do you think a president plays in the inflation rate? Like total control, 100%?
No.
Half, no. Some?
But this president... President Biden and do-nothing Vice President Harris on day one attacked our energy policy. We were independent till this guy got in office.
No, well, first of all, no, we weren't. That's just not true. What, you don't think Saudi Arabia and OPEC cutting oil production by 2 billion gallons has an impact on prices here?
I can say it did. But the mere fact that this guy...
So it does. So there are things outside of the Democratic Party's control or the...
We had natural gas through fracking. Remember, who's the guy that's running in...
So isn't fracking... I mean, fracking is continuing. It's not like Biden came in and on January 21st there was no fracking.
You didn't hear his gaffe this weekend, Maggie?
I'm just asking you a question. Does fracking continue right now, today? Do we continue to produce oil in this country?
Why does gas matter, man? Whoever gaffed more than George Bush Jr.? Why does that matter?
Why does what matter?
Gas. Gas. No, gas.
Misspeaking.
You said gas.
Misspeaking.
Oh, okay. Well, both, all of them are a plus for our economy. And it hurts lower income people more, Earl. Look at diesel fuel.
But my point, CJ, is you cannot, it is simply false. It is simply false.
Okay, you
believe to place the entirety of blame on a political party for inflation. That is not how macroeconomics works. It just isn't. I know that that's not a convenient truth. It's an inconvenient truth, but that's not how it works. Fracking didn't stop on January 21st. It continues to this day. Oil production, offshore oil production, did not stop on January 21st. It continues in this country.
Hey, CJ, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to line five. Who is line five, man? Who's on line five?
Just called in.
I know. Who is it? Just I'm not put sure. them on. Yeah. Yes, go ahead.
Good morning.
Yes. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't hear a producer.
Okay, all right, but now.
I think the problem is, I'm an average citizen, been listening to your radio station, enjoying the discussion. This is what I'm going to kind of rephrase what the previous caller is asking or stating, and that is I just explain to me, I look at it very simply, cause and effect. Unemployment in the black community was at its lowest during Donald Trump.
That was a lie.
That's not true.
That's a lie, man.
Well, untrue.
Okay, I'm going based on what the few friends, black friends that I have, I used to live and work in the community. And if you want to deal with that as a perception, that's fine. But what isn't a perception and what is real and what I'm not hearing, it's fine if you want to go all in on that our democracy was taken away during Trump and that is at risk now. If you want to run with that as a political narrative, that is fine. But what about the inflation? And yes, a bill that was supposed to deal with inflation, in fact, because of the spending, we do have, you recognize, we do have $31 trillion in debt that generates a lot of interest and therefore requires printing of money and is...
That isn't how that works. But let's just...
Well, then explain it to me, ma'am.
Okay, super. We don't print money to pay our national debt. That doesn't work. We do have to debt finance, but it doesn't work like debt finance works for a household, especially when you have an economy that's as large as the United States. The number one driver of our deficit is not entitlement programs, it's military spending. If we wanted to cut our government spending, that would be a good place to look for efficiencies. I'm not talking about undermining veteran care. Every veteran deserves better health care than they get. Here's a fact. During the first 2 years of President Biden's administration, we added 9 million jobs. That is more than any modern Republican presidency when the Republican held both houses of Congress. 9 million jobs. Inflation and all of these impacts that we see happening that do affect our kitchen table, meaning how much we pay for gas and how much our groceries cost, all of these things are subject to a whole wide array of policies that a single president or political party are not solely responsible for, including a lot of the impacts of what's going on by Russia and the disruption of supply chains that came during COVID. Frankly, one can make a pretty logical argument that Trump's complete mishandling of COVID made all of those issues so much worse in America that a lot of those things can be placed at the feet of Donald Trump in terms of the supply chain and continued supply demand misfit that we see right now that is driving prices up.
First of of all, I disagree with the printing of money, but you do address, you do understand that the level of debt has to be addressed through the funding of interest, and those interest payments have to be met by increasing taxes.
Listen, I wish we had more time. We've got to go to a break.
We don't have enough jobs. The problem is that we don't have enough jobs.
I know, listen, we've got to go to a break. Thank you very much for the call. All of you guys, hang on. We'll come back on the other side. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show, Election Day edition of the Earl Ingram Show. Be right back.